Welcome to Lilydale Radio, featuring topics about spiritualism, mediumship, healing, spirituality, and the Lilydale Assembly, the world's largest center for the religion, philosophy, and science of spiritualism. This is Lilydale Radio.
Good morning. Welcome to Wednesdays with Willa. I am your host, Willa White, and this is my weekly podcast show that airs on Wednesday mornings at 10 a.m. on my Facebook page. So you can tune in every week if you wish or catch me later on my archive videos. But this does post every day. I get a lot of questions about that for people who can't always watch it at 10 a.m. Eastern Time. You can catch me later. So you can like and share and follow. You'll be notified as to when I go live and the other events that I have going on. And my weekly podcast show, I typically have a spiritual guest, and we talk about a spiritual topic, usually relating to spiritualism, mediumship, healing, faith, family, and more. And today, my special guest is Ron Skaronski. Thanks for being on the show today, Ron.
It's my pleasure to be here. Thank you for having me.
Yes. Ron's been on the show before, and I like having him back, and he's a really wonderful resource. As far as spiritualism goes, you've been involved for many decades, not to date Ron, as far as things go, but it's been decades.
I know a thing or two because I've seen a thing or two.
Yes, and I believe you're the youngest ordained spiritual minister at one point.
At the age of 25 back in 1980. Now, don't get out your
calculators. He put the date on it. I didn't.
Yeah, don't get your calculators. I'm a very durable 63 now.
There you go.
But at the age of 25, I was by how they calibrated the statistic, I was the youngest spiritualist minister in America, and I could never find anyone or anything that would refute that. So I guess I wore that on my shoulders for a while.
Yes, he was the record holder for a while there.
Yep.
And so he's had a great love of all things spiritualism and, of course, explored other religious understandings. And he has been a minister for many, many years, helping people cope with grief and all kinds of different things that life brings with it. And today our special topic is missing them at Christmas. And that's something that at this time of year we're all very conscious of, especially as we go into celebrations. It does feel different without them there. So we're going to talk about that today, and you'll have an opportunity to really enjoy Ron today and his suggestions. And, strategies for coping with this particular season and a season of life that many experience. So it's something that as spiritualists, we really bridge the gap many times between life and death. And, certainly for ourselves, but for our clients, it's something that we try to find peace about. And so I think this is going to be a really wonderful show, and Ron's a great person to share with all of you today.
Thank you.
Before I forget, I better mention, this is also airing today on Blog Talk Radio. So if you go to blogtalkradio.com/LilydaleRadio, it's an audio-only version of the Wednesdays with Willa podcast, because I am part of the Lilydale Radio family, which is of Lilydale programs that have been put together to really share spiritualism in Lilydale with all of you. So I encourage you to take a look at those things if you want to tune into the other shows as well. So for those of you who are just jumping on with me today, again, this is Wednesdays with Willa, and my special guest today is Ron Skaronski, and our topic is missing them at Christmas. So here we go.
Okay. I think that one of the things that always I become very sensitized to during this time of year is our desire to be happy. And it's not uncommon to see the frenzy, as though we are, you know, just out of control with trying to buy enough stuff, eat enough stuff, drink enough stuff to fill what I have always understood, at least since I became more and more aware of spiritualism and its ramifications in my life, that hole, that emptiness that a lot of people feel during the holidays. And one of the things that I found myself when I'm working with people and helping them put all of this holiday season in perspective is to help them recognize that, my gosh, you know, it's been 10 years since Mom has passed away. It's been 20 years since Dad has passed away. And a lot of people during this period of time want to convince themselves that if they either don't think about it or if they fill their life with stuff in some fashion, that they will indeed get through this, and they do. They absolutely do. And then January comes around, and the thing that's going to haunt them, if you'll pardon the bad choice of words, is their credit card bills and all of the other pain and suffering that goes along with paying for, on many different levels, the holidays. And it occurred to me that many times when I talk to people, what they'll say is, oh, gee, I wish Mom were here. She'd love to see her grandchildren graduate, you know, from high school. Or, oh, I wish Dad were here. He would have loved to have seen how beautifully I did the Christmas tree, because that used to be his thing. And that hurts me. I get a little twinge in my heart, because it's empathy for that person, because I was one of those people. I would have thought of that, you know, back in my teens and my middle teens to my later teens, because by the time I was about 18, I was already very involved in the spiritualist way of thinking. And and I asked them, what makes you believe, what makes you think that they don't know, that they are not somehow with you, acknowledging and affirming you by their very presence? We may not be intellectually or what you'd call consciously aware of it, but it is part of, at least I think, good psychological health to make the assumption that they are. And they'll look at me like I've got two or three heads and say, that's impossible. And my question is, why do you say it's impossible? There are volumes and volumes and volumes, may I say it again for emphasis, volumes of literature, transcripts of seances, transcripts of various expressions of spirit phenomena that affirm the greatest principle, at least, pardon me, I think it's the greatest principle of the spiritualist movement, that the door to reformation is never closed here or hereafter. That not only do they go into the spirit side of life, what we call the spirit side of life, but also they have the opportunity, should they choose to do it, and should you choose to accept it, to come back to you, and in some fashion, and usually this occurs, of course, after the change called death, within, I would say, the first year, that there is some form of contact, a dream, a feeling, an intuition, some type of a sign that they are with us. Now, the funny part is, we would rather believe that this is our imagination or some kind of mental aberration than to believe that the universe in its infinite love and that the universe in its infinite economy and, I'll use the word, mercy, allows for this type of communication interdimensionally, that there are more than just the three dimensions we experience and that it is possible, not only possible, but it is, we claim in the spiritualist understanding, that it is scientifically verifiable. Now, people say, that's impossible. There is no way to verify it scientifically. Well, again, usually that type of a statement is said in ignorance of the research, ignorance of the psychic research that has been done through colleges, universities, institutes of higher thinking and study by people who are and now getting, you know, with technology being what it is, some of the things that are coming through EVP.
Electronic voice phenomenon.
Thank you. I was reaching for some. Yeah.
That's what I'm here for.
Thank you very much. the electronic voice phenomena, some of the stuff that's coming through that is absolutely mind-boggling. And yet you still have so many people who are going to say, nope.
Because they're not ready. And to me, that's okay because I don't try to convert anybody. They'll come to it at their own time. And nothing trumps personal experience.
Very true.
You know, somebody can tell you, but until you're actually in it and experiencing it and feeling that connection with the divine and with your loved one, and there are no words to express what happens within a person when they have that recognition. There's something that ignites within their soul when they're ready.
Without doubt. I think that my point to what I was just alluding to, though, I couldn't agree with you more, is that if people were, I guess the message that I'm coming forth with is open your mind.
Yeah.
And simultaneously open your heart. I find that more often than not, the biggest problem, again, is because we try to fill ourselves with so much stuff, we don't take the time to make those two recognitions about the heart and the mind.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
And what I'd like to suggest and what I would like to invite the listener to consider is a more subtle and yet at the same time a more transcendental approach to all of this, that rather than just closing off and saying, if I don't look at it, if I don't think about it, I can get through this. And I've met people who have lost a child, and 30 years later are no better, no healthier, no more accepting. And one of the major reasons is that they have not opened their heart and their mind to the notion that life is eternal, and that though we may have a physical separation with those that we love, the most important connection, the connection that can never be broken because it is there by the power of love, that if we are able to do that, and even to, I'll use this term from self-help groups, act as if.
Yeah.
Act as if. It's my contention there will be a greater psychological healing.
Mm-hmm.
And then ultimately, and you spoke to this a moment ago, a greater opening spiritually.
Yeah.
My gosh, I can't imagine, people, it's as though they almost get angry with you at times, and I've had this happen more times than I'd like to recall, when you broach the idea of, well, what if you were to look at this from another perspective? Not that you're wrong or and I'm right, and that's a never-ending path to nowhere. But what if you could look at it from another perspective? And let me share an interesting story with you. I am, by my culture, Polish. And in the Polish culture, there is a lot of tradition. Spiritual tradition, spiritual, not just, I'll use the term ceremony and ritual, And when I use those terms, I mean within a family dynamic, not just within church, as you might initially expect. And around this time of year, we celebrate Christmas, and of course, within the Christian tradition, it of course is the birth of the Christ child, and all of the wonderful gifts that the Christ child brings into what is commonly referred to in the secular world as the spirit of Christmas, a spirit of sympathy, empathy, love, caring, sharing, just to name a few. And that uplifts us and gives us hope for the future.
It's that light in the darkness.
The light shining in the darkness, that there is more to our experience than we've allowed ourselves to experience. Well, Christmas Eve is a very, I'll use the term, holy time, because it is the culmination of that great expectation.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
It is why in many Catholic homes, Advent is celebrated. And during that time, the Christmas Eve service for the family is called Vigilia. And in that meal, there are special foods that are served.
Mm-hmm.
They have symbolic meaning, and there's a reason why you serve this rather than that. Very similar to how you would celebrate Passover. There, in the Jewish tradition,
right.
In the Jewish faith, there's reasons you eat this and not that, and and such. Well, there's also two interesting traditions that I find. One is very psychologically uplifting, and that's called Opłatek. And what that means is, you didn't think you'd get a Polish lesson today, did you?
This is Polish language lesson day.
Dzień dobry. Yes, that means good day. You ultimately, what happens is many of your family and friends send holiday greetings, Christmas cards. And in the Christmas card is a flat piece of what most people would, if they looked at it, say, well, this looks like a square communion wafer. And that's what it's made of, flour and water. During the family meal, the head of the household will get up, break the bread, if you will, the communion wafer or the opłatek. It's actually called angel bread, okay? And give it to his partner, let's say his wife. And at that time, he has every opportunity to try to make amends for all the horrible things he's done in the past year. But hopefully that's a very short list. But it's an opportunity to wish his partner a wonderful year, health and happiness. And then from her and throughout the entire table, that's exchanged. Now, the wonderful part about that psychologically is that also you're sending these wafers to Poland or to all the different parts of the country. It's an opportunity to psychologically and in that sense symbolically be together for one of the most important things that we do as humans to bond ourselves and to make us feel connected. Mm-hmm. That's the breaking of the bread, the meal, if you will, the familial meal.
Mm-hmm.
But at each table, there is an empty seat. Now, the empty seat is for what is referred to as the unseen guest. Now, in particularly religious families, it is the seat that is saved for the Christ child.
Mm-hmm.
And that's a wonderful sentiment, a wonderful religious expression. But you'd be amazed that it is probably, at least in my experience, and note mine, you know, no experiences are the same, so this may not be the same for you and yours, but in many experiences, that seat symbolizes where a soul may come that has no place to go. 'Cause here we are on the most, in Christendom, one of the most sacred, if not the most sacred night of the year, except, of course, for, you know, as we talk, you know, at some other point about Easter, but this is the most, one of the most sacred, beautiful, uplifting times of the year. And the group there, the family there, acknowledges that there are souls that are perhaps lonely, that perhaps have nowhere to be and nowhere to go. And this is their opportunity to invite them to become part of their family, their connectedness, their interrelationship. And, of course, the other piece of that is not only the soul that has no place to go, or, as I mentioned earlier, possibly the Christ child, it could be for someone specific.
Sure.
A mom, a dad,
a child. Yeah.
It does not matter. And people have said to me when I've described that to them, well, that seems a little bit, you know, maudlin. It seems a little bit depressing. And I go, really? Try it.
Well, it's interesting because if you look at all many cultures have this going on. If you look at Cinco de Mayo.
Exactly.
If you look at the Day of the Dead, if you look at Chinese culture, it's even for Native Americans, it's just a given in most cultures. It's something that's part of them to include their loved ones in the occasion and to welcome them with joy to that occasion. There's some solemnity at times, reverence, of course, but what I've noticed is that when you can joyfully invite your loved ones around you, it has a way of lifting up your own spirit during those times so that you know they're part of your life still.
Without a doubt. And that's the thank you. That's the key. To break that cycle of feeling that they're no longer a part of you.
Right. If separation is an illusion.
Yep.
And
a big one.
And not that they need to be there 24/7. You've probably heard me say this before. No one's that interesting, and that's why they edit reality
TV. I'm not.
TV.
No, okay.
Maybe Ron is.
No, I don't think so.
Anyway,
I don't think so.
You know, they'll be around for certain events. Certain circumstances, maybe check-in in phases of life. And if they like to hang out around holiday and family celebration kind of things, then they sure will. But I've noticed that some of it is dependent on personality.
Oh, yes.
Yes.
There are some relatives who basically would never spend Christmas with you if you were the last person on planet Earth and vice versa. And that's okay. Because even though the door of reformation is never closed here or hereafter, the notion of good reasoning skills and common sense, there are people that you would never say, maybe if you were striving to learn about forgiveness and mutual forbearance, that would be one thing.
But they also might just be loners.
Yep.
Rather than sit in the corner or find something to do in the garage.
Yep. this is not an opportunity, if you will, like, for example, the empty seat, to conjure, so to speak, your loved ones, whether they want to see you or not. This is an invitation.
A gentle request rather than a demand always works really well with spirit communication.
Without a doubt.
Yeah.
Without a doubt. We have to have the same amount of loving respect and kindness toward their choices, their personalities, their egos, whatever you want to call them, that we would have here.
Absolutely.
That we would have here. And I think a lot of times during this time of year, we use all kinds of clever, well, perhaps that's a poor choice of words. It's not clever. It's more, it's more, in a sense, it's almost, in my opinion, death denying. Well, they live on in your heart, or, you know, they live on in your memory, which is like saying they're a Polaroid picture or maybe a strip of video. My God, I'm dating myself. Videotape, whatever, digital imaging.
Yeah.
And I'm here to say that they are as real in what we would call the dimension of spirit as they were in this dimension that we, you know, currently exist in and can touch each other and give us each other a hug and so forth.
Yeah.
And even though we can't tangibly hug them, that, of course, is the most painful thing because we're not on the proverbial, there is not that sameness that we experience in the three dimensions.
Well, it's one of the reasons we choose to incarnate on the physical earth plane, because there is that touch involved.
Absolutely.
And it's so, you know, it can be so delicious.
Yep.
And we can miss that. And we can also be missing the habit of a person. There's the grief of the person that you feel with their passing.
Sure.
But then there's also the habit of them.
Yep.
And in the everyday life you may have shared with them,
yeah,
or the celebrations you would have shared for the holidays, and all of that comes into play when you're dealing with your grief, at especially at this time of year.
And that's the thing about, thank you, that's the thing about grief. Feel your grief. Don't deny it. I don't care whether the person's made their transition within the last 30 days or the last 30 years. There's a lot of people saying, well, it gets better.
It can. It absolutely can.
Well,
it can get better.
I'm here to tell you that it changes.
Yes.
And what feels like it getting better is that you're changing. And that's hard to even describe, because I can identify that with when, for example, my dad passed away. There are days that I still, and this is over 10 years, there are days that I still think it happened only yesterday. And other times it feels like 1,000 years ago.
It's the way time is.
And yet the beautiful part about what is accepting the fact that he's with me, I don't need a spirit medium to tell me that. Many people do, and that's significantly important. But I have reached a point where I can just, not because I can sense his presence, but if I'm driving along and I suddenly burst out in Polish Christmas carols, and I do speak Polish, but never as well as when I'm under spirit influence, and I sense that it's him. No cosmic communication, no tremendous prophetic insights or any of that. Just, howdy do,
yes,
my boy.
and that's the majority of spirit contact.
Yeah. Yeah.
They're just touching in. It's kind of like a text message level.
Thank you. Exactly. Perfectly put. Yep.
And it's a, hi, how you doing? Or, hey, I'm thinking about you. Or, hey, remember this is how we used to sing the song. A song will come in, and you weren't even thinking about it.
Right.
Your mind was taking you some other track, and there you are, because they've just popped in to say a quick hello and that they were thinking of you.
And that, to me, is so much of a wonderful Christmas present, because it helps veer me away from the blatant garish materialism that, unfortunately, this season has become for everybody, religious and non-religious alike, but also to focus in on, again, those things that are significant.
Yes.
Our love of each other, our compassion and our empathy and sympathy toward each other, and that many times during the Christmas Eve Vigilia, when we acknowledge the unseen guest, when the grace before meals is said,
mm-hmm,
we express our gratitude toward those angelic beings that do grace us when we least are aware of them,
yeah,
to give us that necessary guidance. Within the Catholic tradition, they might be called angels, they might be called saints. In spiritualism, guides, teachers, angelic beings.
Loved ones,
thank you. The beloved is one I just heard, which I thought was really nice.
Yeah, it has that quaint old-fashioned term.
I'm a quaint old-fashioned kind of guy.
Yeah. and so there's that that essence to things that, you know, there are difficulties that one can feel when they're grieving, when things, they remember the good old days or what they didn't realize were good old days.
Right.
That'll happen, or there can be a loneliness that happens. I have clients that they say, I've got more people in spirit than I do here on the earth plane.
Very true.
And they're going through so much of this loneliness. And so there's a tendency for them to want to curl in. I'm not saying they go full on like Grinch.
No, I know.
You know, I don't feel that they're trying to say bah humbug to the rest of us necessarily.
No.
But there's this, well, how can I think of this holiday? And how do I think of any of this going on around me? And I see other people being happy, and I see other people still having their loved ones and maybe not valuing them the way they should. And, you know, so there can be all kinds of different layers within happening within a
person. Well, all the way from resentment to abject self-hatred. And my usual suggestion to people who are going through that, I've had to frankly even suggest it to myself a couple of times over the years. First off, again, acknowledge the grief. Acknowledge it. What am I feeling like hell about?
Yeah.
And then do not, if you can at all avoid it, be alone.
Right.
Reach out to people or let people reach out to you. Now, that sounds way easier than it is, and I'm dynamically sensitive to that, but it is the key to be around people who care, that you perhaps care about, and but equally and perhaps even more importantly for your own benefit, that they care about you. One of the things that was quite fascinating to me, this was many years ago, more like 20, maybe even 25 years ago, I had the first opportunity to volunteer in a soup kitchen. It was Christmas. I was by myself, feeling pretty puny, as we used to say down south, not feeling good about myself. And if I were feeling grinchy, that would be a good thing. So I was lower than the Grinch. And I phone rang, and it was a friend of mine. I'm going over to serve the meal at St. Joseph's house. Would you come with me? I don't want to come with you. You know, but they convinced me that it might be, you know, rather than sit around and, you know, throw snowballs at small children or something. So I don't know. It's just, I'm only kidding. Anyway,
Ron,
I'm
I'll
only
say it.
Kidding.
Ron.
Yes. My wife says that to me quite often. How can you say that? But seriously, and I went, and yep, stirred the stew and served the stew, and there was I experienced what I have now called the magic of Christmas, that it is in the giving that we receive, and that regardless of who I missed, I could remember them holistically. I could remember the good times. I could remember any bad times if I chose to, and remember that because of that principle about the door to reformation, I could use this as a time of great healing.
Yeah.
For myself, for perhaps missing the mark in a relationship, or even if I felt that the other person had missed the mark in some way, to have a what feels like, to many people, a one-sided dialogue, but really is not.
Right.
And to use it as an opportunity to release any negativity in that situation, and to remember that in spite of the fact that I may not be able to give to that person my love in whatever dimension I gave that love, there are so many people in the world who need love, so many people
Absolutely.
Who need acceptance. And if I were just to try to reach out a little bit to them, and it doesn't have to be much, it does not have to be much, but when you take that first step, it is amazing how you feel that spirit of love, that spirit of Christmas, that magic, if you will, that indeed can change your perspective, if not for just that day or that season, but perhaps the beginning of many a day and many a season to come.
And that's something that I think is really valuable to keep in mind. And I know when I'm in pain, let's say it's physical or emotional, whatever kind of pain, I have a tendency to want to hibernate and kind of curl in on myself.
Oh, yeah.
And I do not want to have people around. It's too painful, especially when you're a sensitive or if you're going through a hypersensitive time. It can rub you raw to be around other people, and you start to interpret things in your world with that kind of hypersensitivity instead of a level of compassion. And there may be times where you're feeling self-pity or you're just so throbbing with your emotional pain or your physical pain that you're just so upset, or you could just feel like if you go around people, you're going to have to saran wrap your aura close to you to survive. And so there are these levels that people go through, and it will get better. There are going to be those days, there are going to be those sometimes years, or however it will be. On some level, it will get better. And I've also noticed that because that's the way I deal with pain, when I know that other people are going through pain, I try to give them their space. Because mm-hmm. that's how I am. But not everybody is like that. Sometimes if someone's in pain, they're like, hey, where is everybody? Why aren't they helping me?
Yeah.
Why am I so alone? Don't they know I'm hurting? Either emotionally because someone has passed or physically because something's occurred. And they're just like, where is everyone?
Yeah.
I am alone. Or maybe they're going through a divorce or a horrible situation with a job or whatever it is. And they feel so alone, and they almost feel crippled by it.
Crippled is a good word.
And so
they're unable to move.
Sometimes because I'm sensitive, I'm like, if I go near them, they might just bite my head off, or they, you know, like you just if you're sensitive, you're just like you're trying to like kind of gently, are you okay? Because you know the answer is they're not okay.
Right.
But you don't know how to check in. And I think remember that when you're in pain, that sometimes people don't know how to help you.
No.
They don't know what to say. They don't, and anything they say is probably going to bother you anyway.
Yeah, because there's never the right thing to say, but there is a load of wrong things to say.
Exactly, and you don't even know what the wrong thing is that you're going to say that could trigger.
Exactly.
And so I had this happen not long ago of a friend, acquaintance had a passing, and I was just kind of giving her space, and then one day I was like, all right, I'm going to check in on her. I'm going to say,
yep.
I'm sorry that this happened to you, and I don't know what to say to you, but I just want you to know that I love you, and I hope that you know that, and, you know, what do you need?
Exactly.
You know, and so you're going to have those times in life where you please be aware that some people don't know what to say to make this better or do for you to make this better. And you're going to have this, there are two sides of the
coin. It's significant to know what you need, which is very difficult. It is even more significant to be able to have some ability to ask for what you need.
Yeah.
But what you just stated is, in my opinion, a virtually perfect approach. I've done this whether I've walked into a hospital room with someone who is terminally ill or a situation like you've just described. There are no words I have for you, no words of wisdom, no words of cosmic consciousness. All I can tell you is I care about you. I'm here to be here, and if there's anything that you need, let me know. And many times, the only thing they need is your gift of presence, that you can sit there, hold a hand, or not, and just be there.
Right.
And
that's the tricky thing. How do you know when to be there for someone? Because your own life is very full.
Yep. It's a challenge.
And you, And so here you are, let's say, in your pain and your grief at those moments, and you know somebody else is in pain and grief, but you feel that you're kind of in the aftermath of a shipwreck.
Yeah.
And you're just holding on to your own flotsam and jetsam, and you're trying to figure out where land is, or even if you, should I swim towards?
Yeah.
You know, there's this...
Where's that bird when I'm looking for and finding land?
You
yes.
know, so there are all these things that are going on within a person, and when it's time, you start to come out of that pain. You start to say, I can't just be in this state of pain anymore.
No.
I have to somehow move out of that as my only reality.
Yep.
And I move into some measure of acceptance or grace.
Yep.
And it's hard being strong.
There has to be a spiritual recognition, and I go back to what I call Judaic wisdom, the affirmation that in good times as well as horrible times, this too shall pass.
Yeah.
To give us perspective that it is, well, frankly, not just all about us, which is a very difficult thing for the contemporary human being to understand in our world culture today.
Yeah.
But to, and I've found this to be a tremendous antidepressant, a tremendous opportunity to lift myself out of my own self-pity and my own negative self-awareness,
mm-hmm.
is that when I reach out to somebody to give of myself, and it doesn't have to be huge, it just may be a gesture of, you know, hi, I've been thinking about you, thought I'd give you a call. And after that 2-minute interchange of just, hello, how are you, that answered nothing except the call was made, the expression of kindness was offered,
yeah.
And acknowledged, and then you hang up the phone going, I do feel better. Because there is some kind of a, call it, you know, some of the scientists, I think, are calling it the God particle now. There's something in us that is inherently, universally divine.
Mm-hmm.
And you know, maybe it's what, you know, Edgar Cayce and some of the other mystics have called, you know, that still small voice within us, that sense of the all that is part of our so-called individuality. But when we give of that somehow, when we extend it out in some fashion, it's amazing that, you know, that old chestnut, it is better to give than to receive, somehow begins to take on a reality that we go, wow, you know, it's like that old TV commercial, I could have had a V8. You know, I could have been feeling so much better, and I was unconscious to my own divinity.
This is true.
And one of the things that I usually try to encourage people to do, have yourself someone, if you can find them, and they're very difficult to find, a mentor. And what I mean by mentor is someone who...
90 seconds. Ignore that.
Okay. 90 seconds?
No.
Okay. I
ignore that.
Can't clear my throat in 90 seconds.
No,
anyway,
no.
Have yourself someone... I call it a mentor, but someone who, and it's probably better that they not be a family member like a husband or a wife or your children or whatever, but someone who is a friend who knows you well enough that they won't take